Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. And greetings, everybody. Welcome to Behind the Curtain on WGN Radio. This is Paul Listick from WGN TV, always enjoying my radio outlet to be able to explore the arts and sometimes leave that world of politics I cover on the television end. This is sometimes more fun, wouldn't you agree? Well, there's a new game in town. It's a theater that we've talked about a lot on this program that I've covered for many years, the Victory Gardens Theater, but they have undergone a major change by bringing in a new artistic director. And so now, before the season even gets underway, before we even know what the plans are for the Victory Gardens, we're going to talk to that new artistic director for the company, a company that's been around 46 years. Joining me is Ken Matt Martin. Ken Matt, welcome to the podcast. I hope this is the first of many times we get to chat.
Well, thank you, Paul. I'm very glad to be here, and I also hope it's the first of many.
Yes. So we have to get the key question out of the way that's on everybody's mind, which is, sure. Is your name Kenneth Matthew? and you like both of them, or were you named Ken Matt? Explain our Ken Matt first name.
Wow. This is a great question that no one's actually asked me yet. And
they probably didn't have the guts.
So they didn't have the guts. You will be the first, Paul. Yeah, no, my name is Ken Matt. It was at birth, as given, it was in fact Kenneth Matthew. But when I was, goodness, probably 17, and this is the most showbiz story ever, but I was doing a play as an actor because I was a professional actor from a very young age, and was doing a production of, goodness gracious, what was it? I believe Hello, Dolly, actually. I was one of the I was in the chorus. And
one of the waiters in the restaurant.
Precisely, yeah. And I will never forget that one of the stage managers on that show, there were multiple, my family calls me Matt often, and there were multiple Matts in that production, but she saw my paperwork, also said Kenneth, and so she literally just put them together one day. She was trying to like call my name, and she was like, Kit, Matt, and then it just stuck. And then when I joined the union, and then just like kind of through the rest of my life and career, it was just stuck, and I've been Kim Matt ever since. And so that was now almost 2 decades ago. And yeah,
I love that. Well, there we go. Yeah. And now the truth is out about that. By the way, I collect a lot of Broadway props, and I have one of the metal trays with the cover that you probably carried as a waiter in that restaurant. So who knows? Mine is from the Broadway production, but it could have been yours. Who knows? It may have been passed down.
Well, I did not do it on Broadway, to be clear, right? But like, but if somehow the tray that I carried in that little regional production made its way to Broadway, then that's also exciting.
Yeah, I'm gonna probably have you sign it. Okay, so let's get to know you a little bit, because you're kind of a new face in this town. You grew up in Little Rock, Arkansas, and as you said, you did start out life as an actor. So give us the brief summary of what brought you here and how that shift happened from acting till you decided, no, you know, I'm more of a director and producer.
Yeah, well, you know, I lived many years in Des Moines, Iowa, mm-hmm. and was I'm the co-founder and the former executive director of Pyramid Theater Company in Des Moines. And I, when I was still working as an actor and had been working a lot regionally all over the country doing musicals primarily and also some straight plays as well as an actor, I finally just hit a point where I was doing a particular show that I was not so thrilled about being in. It was a show that was doing well and extended and all these things, but did not feel like it fully represented the types of stories that I wanted to be telling, particularly at that point as a young Black man who had been in this business, you know, but this was when I was in my early 20s. And at that point, I was already, you know, over a decade in. And so I, you know, made a point to say, I think this will be the last show I do as an actor, and then literally never looked back and made that transition to directing and producing. And first came to Chicago in 2015 to work at the Goodman as the general management apprentice to start. left, went to grad school, got a job at Williamstown Theater Festival as a producing director and lived in New York City while I did that job, because that's where Williamstown's offices are during the year. They just go up to the Berkshires for the summer. And then when that job, it became clear that I was kind of more interested in doing something that felt a little bit more closer to community engaged work, I decided to come back to Chicago and to the Goodman, and then was there before I got this job.
And indeed, if you studied under the tutelage of people like Rock Schulfer and Bob Falls, you couldn't be in better hands, yeah, right, for getting to know the artistic and the business side of everything, given that team. And of course, I know in your directing world, you've done Tick, Tick, Boom. I mean, you've done just a whole range of things. But here's the thing. As I've looked at the body of work that you're doing, it looks as though, mm-hmm, I'm going to pose the question this way. There was the Dennis, sure, Zajac era, and I know you've done your homework, the Dennis Zajac era, where shows struck me as, you know, Dennis was great, loved Dennis, still around. They were sort of safe, in my view, new works, but safe. In comes Che Yu, and he just turned Victory Gardens on its head, just taking risks, whether it was nudity on stage or drugs, whatever it was. He just gave you the cutting edge stories. How will the Ken Matt era be looked at, just as maybe I've properly or improperly described the two previous eras, but it's pretty much only the third era coming. So how would you describe what we're about, sure, to see?
Well, you know, I have to give full credit, obviously, to both Dennis and Che, right, first and foremost. And Dennis for having the insight and the vision, right, to start a company devoted to new work at the time that he did. It was revolutionary, right? That's one of the reasons why it won the regional Tony, right? Like, all of the work that Dennis started out doing is what set the path. And then Che came in and, as you said, kind of blew the door open, right? And then pushing to do new work that felt a little bit maybe more risky and a little bit more dangerous and a lot more ambitious, certainly. And with me, I'm just really grateful that I've got to inherit a theater that Che already kind of blew the door open in terms of doing the riskier and more dangerous work. And frankly, that will continue under me. And I think what will feel different maybe or riskier is that even despite Che's really brilliant, beautiful work in ensuring that there were as many voices represented as possible in his 9-year tenure, there's still plenty of other voices, right, that we haven't quite gotten to yet. And we have a mission. The mission of the theater literally says in the body of the mission that we are meant to be a theater for all. And so bearing that in mind, under me, you will see a continuation, right, of the bold, ambitious, risky new work that existed under Che and under Dennis. But I'm trying to make sure we also are really hitting all these other pockets that feel really important. So whether that be Native playwrights or playwrights that are trans or non-binary and of the sort, in terms of making sure that we're also really telling as many different stories as possible, because in a great city like Chicago, all of those people actually do live here and exist here. So I'm hopeful that the Chicago community will be able to embrace hearing as many different types of stories as possible, and also will be have an appetite for really risky new work. And I can also say at this point, the other big thing is I'm interested and already I'm working really hard to find more co-producing partners elsewhere so that our beautiful work that starts here in Chicago will have an opportunity to go and live other places. And that's something I'm feverishly working on trying to figure out as well.
Oh, so important. And of course, some works have done just that, which is wonderful. And of course, the Goodman is known for doing that as well, as is Steppenwolf. And this is a great theater town. Obviously, you talk about the ambitious, innovative plays, totally with you on that. But as I've been reading more about you, it also looks like we're going to see plays that spark conversation, that are about social change. I mean, that looks like an angle you plan to focus in on.
Yeah, well, to be clear, that's also part of the mission, right? So I don't see that as a departure or anything different, right, than what has been stated as the mission of the theater from the beginning. But yes, of course, you know, my personal mission statement is that I believe the arts can and should be used as a catalyst for social change. And I have to be honest, one of the things that convinced me to apply for this job was when I knew that it was available to apply, I went and did the thing many do. I went and looked at the website and I went to the page with the mission and the vision statement. And I was literally like flabbergasted when I looked at the vision statement, which also literally says almost exactly the same thing. It's a little different. The language, it says inspiring conversation, you know, for civic change and in the larger kind of like social change interest, right? And yet that's essentially the same thing that's been my personal mission statement for many years. So yes, of course, that will also be a big part of sparking the conversation. And frankly, you know, again, using those two examples I just said about Native playwrights or trans and non-binary playwrights, right? Like, those are areas in which those folks have not always been given a platform to tell their own stories unapologetically. That is likely going to spark some conversation and hopefully some changing of minds and thinking around a myriad of topics as well. Just using those two communities as example, and there are many, many more that also need to be represented as far as marginalized identities that exist out there.
I'm sure you are aware of the unrest that went on, you know, which led to the opening of the position and the changes that have gone on there. Does that play a large part in your thinking, or is it really, you know, that was then, we're moving on, and it's a new day?
Well, I'm glad you asked about that. You know, I am not one to act as if we can't acknowledge where we've come from if we're going to also try to figure out where we're going, right? So, you know, whether it be that or even the various other things that I'm learning currently from my really ambitious listening tour that I'm doing, you know, it's deceptive in that this job was announced a full month and a half before I actually started it, and I'm actually only in week four at this point of starting said job, and I've spent these last 4 weeks, as of today, I've already had individual, personal, one-on-one meetings and conversations with about 50-plus artists and former employees of the institution to get a really honest and deeper understanding of where all we have been as I chart the path, right, for where we're going. So whether it be the tumultuous events of this summer that were more public or the incident that happened 30 years ago that's still sticking with that artist as something that they wished, you know, we could have done better and done differently. I'm taking all of that into mind as we really take our time and are strategic and intentional about how we chart the path for the future.
And by the way, people should, and I will send them, I'll put this in our description when this gets launched, but you are on the listening tour. It continues into June. And so that's just an open forum where people can, I actually intentionally did not want to, you already had a couple of them, but I wanted to have this conversation, so I didn't want to join in those. But is it one where people literally, you open it up and go, okay, folks, what do you want to know?
Yeah, I mean, so the way that I'm utilizing it, right, is to listen more so than just like, what do you want to know? Of course, I leave it open for people to ask me questions and whatnot as well. But I'm really intentional about, you know, as I connect with people and connect with folks who have a connection and love the theater, just taking the time to actually listen. And so far, that's mainly been curated by way of, you know, starting with our past Playwrights Ensemble members or starting with the myriad of artists that have worked at the theater in the last, you know, over the last 47 plus years now. And so as I talk to those people, they also say, you know, you need to talk to blah, blah, blah. And I add them to the list. And, you know, here I am now 8-9 meetings deep a day and loving every second of getting a real deep understanding of the history of this institution, because I don't think it wise to act like I can just come in and start making a bunch of decisions and choices without understanding where we're coming from. So that's why I'm taking my time and being intentional.
And that's a great comment to make to launch into my next question, because I know you're not, correct me if I'm wrong, but I know you're not prepared to talk about, here's what the new season looks like, here are our shows. We're not there yet. But what I do want to know is, talk to me about the process. In other words, if I were to write a play and submit it and whatever, talk to me about what goes through your mind. What are you looking for? Because obviously that vision has to guide you in the decisions you are currently making.
Well, I should say, first and foremost, in terms of what will be the season that we'll be announcing probably in the next month or so, that will be our return season, you know, post-COVID, a lot of it is about honoring the commitments already made. You know, we lost, just like every other theater, a whole 2020 season of commitments made to artists. And just like every other theater and other theater leader I know, many are trying to make sure that we can, as an institution, honor those commitments already made, right? So I can say, without it revealing too much at this point when we're not quite ready to announce, that some of the previous things that had been announced under Che will be moving forward, right? To answer your larger question about how I handle the process and everything, one of the biggest things that I've learned in terms of lessons from my time at Williamstown, from my time at Goodman, is that often there is a very small number of people who are actually involved in the season planning process. At some places, it is solely just the artistic director chooses things that are of interest to them, and then they're like, here's the place, thank you everyone, let's figure out how to do them. And then in other places, there's a more collaborative process that exists where there's a smaller group of people, you know, two or three. For me, I just really enjoy connecting with artists. And because I have been a freelance artist, because I've worked so many places, because I have such an eclectic kind of palette of different types of plays that I'm interested in, aesthetically and otherwise, what's most important to me is connecting with the artists that I want to support the most, and then giving them the platform to tell the stories that they want to tell. So yes, I'm reading a lot of plays. I don't mind revealing, and my whole staff knows this. I take every Friday to read, and I will give full credit where it's due to my former boss, Manny Greenfield, the artistic director at the Williamstown Theater Festival. I stole this from her, so giving her full credit. But I take Fridays, and I read about 10 plays in a day every Friday. So I'm reading a lot. I'm having a lot of conversations. But what's most important are the artists that we want to collaborate with and the stories that they want to tell and how they can connect those to our public programs, to our community partners, because we have a mandate as a theater to also ensure that our work really is not just speaking to the social change issues that we feel are important, but that the community feels are important. So it's a multi-pronged process that's inclusive of me allowing other folks to read the plays and giving me as much feedback and thought as possible around them so that I can parse through all the ins and outs of it, while also focusing primarily on, like, who is this artist? What story are they trying to tell? And are they aligned with us as an institution in trying to move things forward? Would they enjoy being in conversation with this community partner or having this public program where we have larger conversations that might include people who don't even see their play ever, right? What is that artist's, you know, interest and commitment to wanting to tell stories that reflect and can change their communities is what I focus on the most.
Listen, you had me at 10 plays on a Friday. It's all I can do to get my laundry done on a Friday. So I you know, I'm amazed by that. You know, I know you weren't at Goodman when some of this thing happened, some of these things happened, but Goodman, of course, became a place which somebody like Stephen Sondheim decided he's going to bring his show Bounce. You remember Bounce? It became
Yeah.
I actually, by the way, I actually have a prop that flew off the stage from the Goodman into my lap, and I met Sondheim at a thing once, and he saw something in my hand. He goes, "No, I'm not doing autographs." And I told him, "But this is a prop from Bounce." He goes, "I'll sign that." So, but anyway, but you know, people like Nathan Lane, August Wilson. I mean, the folks who looked to Goodman Theater and said. So my question to you is two part. Number one, what playwrights are huge influences to you? And if there was a current playwright who you would love to say, come check out Victory Gardens, let's do your new play here, the current August Wilson. I know he's gone, but right. But so who influences you? Who do you want to come to the Victory Gardens?
Sure, I love this question. You know, I've been really, really, really fortunate in my career between my time at Williamstown and at Goodman to get to work with some of the greatest living writers, period, including many, you know, up-and-coming legends and other legends who have since even passed just through the kind of random hodgepodge life that has been my career in this business. So when we talk about playwrights who really inspire me, I mean, one that comes to mind is Dominique Morisseau. She's become a very, very dear close friend of mine as well. And we, of course, at Victory Gardens produced her play Pipeline some years ago. And the play that was actually out when COVID hit and when the shutdown hit, we were actually in the middle of touring Pipeline, right, within the communities. And Dom is someone who's become such a dear friend, and I want to continue, obviously, finding opportunities to do more of her work at Victory Gardens in the future. So she's one that definitely comes to mind. You know, on the flip side of that, when I was in grad school, I was so fortunate to get to spend a little bit of time here and there with Paula Vogel, you know, and we also obviously did Indecent. We gave the Chicago premiere of Indecent. So when you start talking about playwrights that inspire me, Paula, Dominique, Lynn Nottage, who's also someone who's become a friend of mine through my time at other places and spaces, is another one, obviously, who comes to mind. In terms of those who I believe are like living legends, you know, in their own right, as they continue still as working playwrights, right, to also do things in a whole lot of other spaces. So those folks in particular are some of the first ones, you know, that come to mind. And then honestly, for a theater that also does new work, we are going to be a home and a space for newer and younger writers as well. So on the flip side of that, I also have my eyes and ears to the ground, and there's writers like there's this amazing young writer named Gage Charlton, who is, you know, of the Gen Z generation, who I've kind of got to know because he was actually a former student of mine, and he's kind of having a moment right now in New York and elsewhere, and he's like someone who comes to mind, and or someone like Rihanna Yazzie, who's a brilliant Native playwright who's based in Minnesota and runs New Native Theater, which is a theater devoted specifically to Native playwrights and work in Minnesota. I'm just as interested in getting them in our mix and with among our auspices, and I will get in trouble for naming playwrights, right? Like, I'm going to get in huge trouble, but you asked, and I'm just naming a few. To be clear, there are so many others, and if you let me, I would spend the next 5 minutes just saying names. But
you can send me a list, yeah, and I'll post them. Well, and let me ask you, so once a play is selected, obviously it moves to casting. And, you know, I think obviously the casting world, again, it got turned on its head with Hamilton. And I remember interviewing mm-hmm. the creative team of Hamilton, and I made the mistake. I didn't know it was a mistake, but I made the mistake of talking about their casting being colorblind because, you know, Thomas Jefferson wasn't black, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. And they corrected me and said, it's not colorblind. It's color intensive. I've shifted mm-hmm. to use that term more. But my question to you is, how will today's currency, again, I'm going to give a tip of the hat to Hamilton. You might or may not agree with that, but do you look at a play and say, okay, this is a gay role, a gay man should be playing that. That's a trans role, a trans person needs to play that. Or do you look and say, it doesn't matter because this is acting?
Well, I defer to the artist, right? Like, if you're asking me as a producer, if you're asking me as a director, I would always defer to the writer, to the playwright, first and foremost, in terms of like, what are their goals? What are their intentions around how important it is to ensure that the representation and the story that they've written is championed and told by those who actually represent those respective communities, right? Like, I'm going to defer to what the artists and the writers are always interested in. That being said, in terms of my own personal belief, you know, yes, is the short answer to your question, that I do believe it is important, and it is always possible to find people who actually represent the respective identities that might be written, who are more than capable of playing those roles. It takes more work. It might even take you, in some cases, a little bit more support in various other ways. But I do think it always prudent to find opportunities to empower everyone to tell their own stories, regardless of the varied identities that a person might represent. You're just never going to see, in my opinion, something as powerful, than what you will find when someone is empowered and able to really tell their own story. And that's my philosophy. And ultimately, I also really, truly do defer to the artist in regards to the story that they're trying to tell, because it begins with the word on the page, and that's the playwright, and I will follow their lead and their cues on what they think is most important.
I'm going to give you a flip side to a question I asked you before. I asked you what you were looking for as you read through 10 plays on a Friday and what strikes you. This is going to be a little tougher, but I'm asking you for no examples, so don't worry about that.
Sure.
What is it when you look at a play and read it and go, nah, this is not right for Victory Gardens? Why not?
Well, first of all, if I do read a play and I'm like, oh, no, this isn't quite right for Victory Gardens, the first thing I do is think about who it might be right for. Because as I said, I'm genuinely interested in supporting artists. And so I will think about who it might be right for. And then I will shoot a note to that friend or colleague elsewhere and be like, hey, I have a play that I think you should read. So that is first and foremost what comes to my mind. And then in terms of like, it's not right for Victory Gardens, listen, there are so many different moving pieces that go into play as far as planning a season is concerned. Sometimes it could very well be right for Victory Gardens, and yet the scheduling of things might make that impossible, or the scope or the depth of what we want to achieve and how we can best support it, right, in terms of what resources we have and what the play and the artists might be interested in doing may not match. And then I'll be like, oh, I'm sorry, I just don't know that this is a good fit for us. I don't know, considering our mission, that there's any type of play that I would just carte blanche say is like, oh, this may not necessarily be right for Victory Gardens, because I have, you know, until I read it and can get a sense of what all the writer and the artist is trying to do and trying to say, I then have to kind of run it through a whole larger litmus test, if you will, of like, how is this going to affect our community engagement work? How is this going to tie into our community partners and our public programs initiatives? How is this going to square up with, this is clearly something ambitious, is the artist interested in something maybe a little bit more abstract? Because we aren't the theater that can do the like commercial Broadway production, because that's not what we are, right? And so bearing all of that in mind, those are the things that come top of mind if I read a play and I'm like, maybe not for us. There's a long laundry list of things I have to consider. And even more importantly, and I literally do this every day, when I read something, I'm like, this isn't for us, I will immediately send it to an agent friend, another artistic director friend, another director who I think might be a good fit for it, who can champion it somewhere else. So.
You know, that's actually not only a good answer, a very diplomatic answer, I must say. I hope other producers out there listen to that answer, because they go, wow, he didn't put anybody down in that. That was really good. We're almost out of time. First of all,
to be clear. But
absolutely. And by the way, I have been done voiceover work for Great Gardens over at Theo Ubuque and for Sheer Madness over at Mercury. So can we commit now that you'll use me for all the voiceover work needed at Victory Gardens?
I don't know that I can. That might be above my pay grade, Paul.
Oh darn! All right, I just thought if I could, get that, I'd have it in, you know, audio, and I'd play the tapes when I don't get cast. Okay, and then just kidding. And finally, Ken Matt, I guess what I want to say is when the first season is behind you, and before you know it, it will be. What do you want people, theater goers, theater lovers, who take in so much theater? How do you want them to look back at your first season of Victory Gardens when they're asked, hey, how would you describe that? What do you want them to, and what did you think of Ken Matt's first season at Victory Gardens? What do you want them to say? What do you hope they will say?
You know, well, first of all, I will say that my first full season of Victory Gardens will likely not be until 22-23, right? Because I have to honor some of these commitments that my predecessor Che made. So I want to just publicly say with a huge caveat that, like, my first full season is probably likely still another 2 years away, right? That being said, in terms of, you know, to answer your question, when we get to that point, and even after people take in this first season, what I really hope people say is that they had an opportunity and now have a deeper understanding of how our work is in closer conversation with the community engagement work that we're doing, the civic engagement work that we're doing, the community partners, the public programs, and specifically I have to shout out my partner in crime, Roxana Connor, who is the biggest unsung hero of this entire transition as she moved in flawlessly into the managing director role, right, over this past year. And she really has been the guiding force behind making sure that all of our programmatic things are talking closer to each other. So my biggest hope is that people will come out of that first season feeling inspired, feeling challenged, feeling invigorated, and feeling entertained, frankly. You know, I come from a musical theater background, as I've alluded to. And also, I just love the idea of people being able to go to the night, have a good night at the theater and enjoying the show. So I'm hopeful that all those things will be true and that people feel like they then can also take action in other ways as well.
Well, great vision, and fair enough that you sort of say we're two seasons away from the true Ken Matt Martin season that we'll look back on. That's an important point to make. Ken Matt, formerly Kenneth Matthew, formerly Matt by the parents, I wish you every best wish. Break legs with every performance and every show. I can't wait as you're at the new helm, the helm of the new Victory Gardens Theater. We just send you all the best. We're so excited to see theater come back. Victory Gardens, as many people will tell you, is one of my favorite theaters in this city for a whole host of reasons that you've talked about. And I just couldn't be more supportive and more behind you. I wish you well, and I hope we'll continue our dialogue as time goes on. I look forward to seeing you on opening nights, because I am there for your opening nights. Because I'm also a donor,
you,
by
Paul.
The way.
Wonderful. Well, listen, if you want to increase your gifts, Paul, then we can start talking about this.
talk to the donor people. They're pretty happy with where I am, I think. So, well,
I'm joking.
Ken Matt Martin,
I'm really joking.
No, I know. You've got great sense of humor. Thanks for playing with me for a half an hour. I appreciate you. Thanks so much. We'll look forward to talking to you. Ken Matt Martin, the new artistic director of the incredible Victory Gardens Theater. It's a new era. It's a new day. I wish you well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you so much.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes, and tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.